540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Shoppers turned out for Black Friday. Abrielle Laurent went to the Lakeside Shopping Center in New Orleans, where she was handed a glass of champagne.
When I saw people walking around with it, I thought it was something they were buying. But so when the lady told us it was complimentary, that was even better.
Our Rita Foley has more.
Macy's Herald Square in Manhattan has been bustling with shoppers today. 60% off fashion jewelry, 50% off select shoes, says Macy's. CEO Jeff Gannett says there's significantly more traffic on this Black Friday compared to the previous 2 years because shoppers feel more comfortable in crowds. But how much money will they spend? Analysts say shoppers are buying cheaper items now as higher prices for food, rent, gas, and other necessities weigh on them. They're dipping more into savings and turning to buy now, pay later services. Some are running up their credit cards. I'm Rita Foley.
And I'm Ben Thomas, AP News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation-related, and Brewing says it's badly needed, as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rose says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. What's your mind, Gene of Eau Claire?
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
What's your mind, Andrew of Detroit?
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
Get it, slip it, cuff it, check it. Talk to doctor now and share it.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it twice a day.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it in the morning and before dinner.
I get it, slip it, cuff it, check it, and share it with my doctor. Nearly 1 in 2 U.S. adults have high blood pressure. That's why it's important to self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. It starts with a monitor.
Now that I know my blood pressure numbers, I talked with my doctor.
We're getting those numbers down.
Get it, slip it, cuff it, check it. Talk to doctor now and share it.
Be next to talk to your doctor about your blood pressure numbers. Get down with your blood pressure. Self-monitoring is power. Learn more at manageyourbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association. In partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
I'm Chris Jakimick. I served in the United States Air Force, and I deployed 3 times. So in 2017, I was serving as an Air Force First Sergeant. Our motto in that role is, my job is people, everyone is my business. But unfortunately, in that year, I would lose my own brother, Lance Corporal Adam Jakimick, to suicide. The majority of veteran suicides are from guns. I store my weapons securely, not only for myself, but for my family. Store all your guns securely. Help stop suicide. My service never stops.
Brought to you by End Family Fire and the Ad Council.
My mother was very familiar with her neighborhood, but one day she stopped at the stop sign and she wasn't even really sure where she was at.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Long sky, yes. It's a car moving along the highway. You moving to California with me. I'm almost 2,000 miles from my home, sweet home. 2,000 miles from the arms that bore me. 2,000 miles from my sweet home, Milwaukee.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. A reminder, if you like our show, tell your friends. We are a growing show on a growing network, and we could use your help spreading the word. And so I am so excited for our next guest. He is the Milwaukee historian, John Gerda, because he has been the go-to source for all things Milwaukee history. He has published 22 books on the city's history, including Milwaukee, A City of Neighborhoods, Cream City Chronicles, The Making of Milwaukee, his latest book, Brewtown Tales. And I also found out this week, I didn't know that you were a regular on Around the Corner with John McGivern, but we also had John McGivern on this week. And so, both Johns, 1 week. And as of last week, after 29 years, you're hanging up the column in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. So we thought this would be a good opportunity to get you on the show. Welcome, John Gerda.
Thanks for having me. So you've had John McGivern on, Lois Maurer, who was our producer for Around the Corner. She said, two Johns, no waiting.
How much fun was it to do that show with him?
It was a lot of fun. I was front loaded. You know, I would do all the research beforehand, and early on we began to have kind of spontaneous conversations, and there was a lot of sort of dead air. You know, so what happened was I scripted it. You know, so I had to memorize it, and then John, he would have to memorize the cues, you know, kind of the outros. And then he figured out that he had his cell phone. He could put the questions on there and say, oh, and what was the population at that time? so it became a lot easier for both of us, and a lot more seamless. And it was fun. You know, we would do maybe 2 takes, sometimes 3, wherever we were for 9 years. So it was 115 shows, something like that. But then for me, a real pleasure of that job was when I was through taping with John and Lois, I would go biking. You know, so it was all around the state, from Ashland down to the southwest corner to, you know, around the Milwaukee area. So I got to see a lot of the state, and I'm as much a Wisconsinite as I am a Milwaukeean. So that was a real pleasure.
Yeah, and that's because I listened to one of your interviews, I think from a couple years ago, with WPR, after you had done a Milwaukee Magazine interview. And so your mother's from the Driftless region, right? Near La Crosse. Yep. So you really, as much as you are known for Milwaukee, have gotten to do history all across the state.
No, I'm bicoastal. You know, my dad's Polish from the south side of Milwaukee, so I'm on Lake Michigan. And my mom was from the Driftless around Coos Valley, Wisconsin, near the Mississippi. So I kind of touch both sides of the state.
Absolutely. So there's so many different ways I want to take this conversation, but so you're hanging up the column for now after 29 years, and this isn't retirement, right?
Oh, no, no, no. I've been getting all kinds of retirement. I got a call this morning from a county supervisor saying we want to do a citation for you to be retiring. And I had to explain to him that I'm not retiring. No, the Journal Sentinel gig, that was 2 days a month.
Yeah.
So, you know, as you know, as another freelancer, you know, you kind of patch together a living for all these years. So I'll keep writing. You know, we just had a Jones Island documentary that was premiered on Milwaukee PBS. You know, the Brewtown Tales book is out. Working on a series of tours, publishing the tours of Milwaukee, doing a lecture series. We can get it together, kind of about Black history in Milwaukee. So that's I've got a lot of things I need doing. So I had to tell the supervisor, thank you very much. I much appreciate the thought, but a little premature.
A little premature. Well, and to say what you just said, as far as you've made a career out of being a historian. And when mm-hmm. you went and got your master's from University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, because you were an English major for your undergrad, correct?
Right, yep.
And then you went and got your master's in history. And so did you think that you could be a historian and not have to be a professor?
No, not at all. You know, especially with a master's degree, and that's as far as I got. And I didn't want to go any farther. I was working, and I kind of wanted to get back out, kind of in the world and writing. So I was never tempted by academia. But no, it's been 50 years. You know,
yeah.
Back in 72 is when I first kind of went freelance. And to think that I've been able to do this all these years is my mom would be shocked. You know, whenever there would be somebody retiring from the Journal, which is our paper before they merged back in 95, you know, she would say, I see Gerald Kloss is hanging it up. Maybe you should talk to those people. She could never believe, you know, that this could be a career. And fortunately, I have a patient wife, Sonia, you know, who she tells people, no, she would ask sometimes what my backup plan was. There was no backup plan. No, there was no other net.
So have you always just kind of trusted the process of knowing that there was going to be another book or another TV show or a column, or just kind of knowing that by being the kind of expert on Milwaukee's history of where we've been and potentially how that can inform where we're going, that you just trusted that there was going to be opportunities to continue to write and talk about that?
Basically followed my nose.
Yeah.
And there was no inside to come to. No, so actually, a lot of what made this career possible, is I would do commission work for nonprofits and for businesses, you know, so that that pays a whole lot better than freelance work, as you know. So I've done histories of Miller Brewing, Northwestern Mutual, twice. So repeat business, 25 years apart. I did two books on Northwestern Mutual. Lattice, We Energies, Harnischfeger, which is, you know, kind of reincarnated as Komatsu. So I would write these book length, you know, histories of these companies, as well as Forest Home Cemetery, Emmanuel Presbyterian Church, Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church, Frank Lloyd Wright. So I got to hang around to Taliesin. So over the years, I've gotten to visit a whole lot of different worlds, and kind of someone described as building little houses by the roadside. You know, so kind of pass those and say, "Oh yeah, I worked on that one." So those commission jobs, you know, were essential to me being able to kind of fund, you know, the more community oriented sorts of things. And over time, you know, developed enough enough body of work and enough contacts so I could raise money for things like the Making of Milwaukee or City of Neighborhoods, or most recently the Jones Island documentary. So yeah, it's been. I've always said that. Not, recently said, you know, that if I were to write a memoir, it would be 50 years of 1099s. I have not had a W-2 since 1972.
Wow, that is incredible. We're talking to Milwaukee historian and writer John Gerda about all things of his career, but also Milwaukee. And so, do you feel like there's still more things for you to learn about Milwaukee?
Oh, sure. Or at least ways to package it.
Okay.
The TV is more interesting to me lately than writing. I just did a show called People of the Port for Milwaukee PBS that just premiered last week. And that was a half-hour look at just a fascinating slice of real estate in Milwaukee. Everything from the largest Indian village in Milwaukee to, for 50 years, a Polish fishing village. So there are those stories to tell. And yes, I'm always learning stuff. Just yesterday, I was looking for something else. I do a back page thing for Milwaukee Magazine. I take a historic photograph and do a 300-word essay. And I was looking for something else and came across this half-page story about the Menominee Valley from 1898, you know, which I'd never seen before. And they're talking about, you know, people searching through the piles of refuse for tin to scrap, and the jubilant cry of the factory whistle at quitting time, and the tin pail crowd that kind of streams out of the valley. So, yeah, there's always stuff. You know, we're always making more history. So the mine is inexhaustible.
Well, John, now that you're stepping away from your column, but you're not retiring, like many other reporters in Milwaukee, whenever something came up about the history, it's like, call Gerda. We need to talk to John Gerda.
I still answer my phone.
You do. So reporters can still continue to bother you as time goes on.
Yeah, people are not reluctant.
And I said this before, John, and I mean this sincerely, that Making a Milwaukee is one of my favorite books in the world. I've given it as a Christmas present many, yeah, many, many times, and the series as well is wonderful.
Yeah, we're now in the fourth edition, you know, so it's wow. It's update. Yep.
So as far as if you had to pick, what was the golden era of Milwaukee?
There is no golden era.
There is no golden era.
There is no golden era. Nope. There are no golden days. There are no good old days. You know, I said to my kids when they were growing up, you know, they complain about whether it was adolescence or they're 5 years old. There is something good and something bad about every single age, you know, whether you're 7 months or seven decades. And the same thing's true about a city's history. You know, so you think about, you know, the good old days of the 1890s when life was more carefree and we cared about each other and we walked everywhere. You know, look at the river, how polluted it was. Yeah. Look at the coal smoke that kind of settled this pall over the entire city. So it's always it's human life is yin yang, you know, it's always this mixture of darkness and light, you know. So there is no golden period I would look back to as kind of this is where, you know, Milwaukee got it and we should all go back there. It's not the way
the world works. But as far as you know, pivotal moments as far like the timeline and maybe even just of the last century, like what do you think the biggest shifts have been in the city politically or kind of like the milestones that we've hit that we should all kind of like keep in mind as we try to continue to improve on the city?
The biggest pivot is 1910, when socialists won the mayor's office and a majority of common council seats. And that ended a period of graft, corruption, and just, you know, downright self-dealing. Milwaukee was just as dirty as Chicago on a bad day. You know, so Milwaukee really was. I have a talk called How the Socialists Saved Milwaukee. Yeah, they really did. Now it's become kind of the S word, except for Bernie, kind of American politics. But they were excellent governors. And what animated them, what motivated them was concern for the public good. You know, public enterprise, you know, was the kind of the term they constantly used. So, you know, Dan Holland got his picture in the cover of Time magazine back in 1936, Milwaukee's mayor from 16 to 40. And Time called Milwaukee perhaps the best governed city in the U.S. So these guys knew what they were doing. And they were women too, but it was largely guys back then. So 1910's a pivot. And there are certainly, you know, that heritage, you know, Frank Zeidler stepped down in 1960. So it's quite a while ago now, but for most of 50 years, we had socialist mayors. And I've argued that that's kind of part of Milwaukee's civic subconscious. It's still there. You know, it's threatened. It's fragile, but it's still there. That kind of, that mutuality, mutualism, you know, kind of concern for the common good, I think is still a part of our DNA. Other pivots, certainly one huge one was that period from 79 to 83 when we lost a quarter of our manufacturing jobs. Mm. And that was, but certainly other cities were harder hit, but that had a huge impact, especially on Milwaukee's minority community. You know, in the 50s, actually until about 1970, black workers had a higher proportion of production jobs than white workers. And that meant union jobs in a union town. So you had people joining the middle class, and then just the ladders kind of pulled out from under them with that deindustrialization. So that's a big shift.
Absolutely. All right. Well, when we come back, I actually want to talk about some of the historical women of Milwaukee. Our guest for this half hour is historian John Gerda. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
It's
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP. We're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
What is dedication?
My daughter started making necklaces. She makes what we call affirmation fashion. I tell her every day that your black is beautiful. And if there's anything better than being beautiful, it's being smart. And if there's anything better than being smart, it's being kind. And reaffirming that every day is our method of making sure her chin never drops.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council. What is dedication?
I think a parent's job is to protect our children, but also prepare them for the world so they become good, kind human beings.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Chance for scattered rain showers this afternoon, otherwise overcast. High temperatures reach up to 38. Winds out of the southeast around 5 miles an hour. Cloudy skies tonight. Mixed precipitation possible at times. Lows level off around 33. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Highs level off around 37. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
Well, welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Our guest this half hour is historian John Gerda, who is the go-to source for all things Milwaukee history. And in the previous segment, before the commercial, we were talking about some of the mayors and men who have shaped Milwaukee. But who were some of the women that are notable historical figures that helped Milwaukee be what it is?
Two heroines of mine are part of the Jewish community, and they are Golda Meir and Lizzie Kander. And Golda, obviously, you know, she was Prime Minister of Israel, so she's a big deal. Got lots of things named after her here. But she grew up here. She came here at the age of 8 and stayed until she was in her 20s. So her formative years were spent here in Milwaukee. And she was very active in both the Zionist and the socialist circles here in Milwaukee. So she was part of, you know, that sort of that ferment, you know, back in the first decades of the 20th century. So certainly she was a heroine. And then Lizzie Black Kander was someone of German Jewish background. And there was kind of a gulf between the Eastern Europeans who came here back in the 1880s, who were kind of the great unwashed, you know, kind of is how they were sometimes stereotyped. And she was affluent, kind of from the German side, the assimilated side, and she ended up opening something called The Settlement, which was like Jane Addams' Hull House in Chicago, you know, come one, come all, and for everything, everything from Yiddish newspapers to a savings bank to a library branch. And that became the Jewish Community Center. And to raise money for her settlement, she did. She taught cooking classes, and she would put the right ingredients, you know, very easy to follow. And the result was a settlement cookbook, which sold, you know, well over a million copies. And I think it was no longer in print, but that was a really big deal. So Lizzie, you know, Lizzie and Golda are really, you know, very, very prominent figures in Milwaukee's history of the women in Milwaukee. Maida Berger, who was the wife of Victor Berger, who was a socialist stalwart here. You know, she was very active in her own right. And going way back, Josette Juneau, who was Solomon's wife. You know, she was a part Menominee by ancestry. And even though it meant the city was not, the fledgling city was being transformed before her very eyes, she acted as a midwife. She was kind of a hostess, you know, for the early Europeans who came in. So she was a towering figure as well. So there is representation, you know, not as egalitarian as it should be, but, you know, there are certainly some notable women in Milwaukee's past.
Yeah, absolutely.
John, you've done a lot of interviews over the years. I've done a lot of interviews over the years. I've had some real clunkers. from people who you expect are going to be wonderful? Has there ever been one where you were just like, this did not turn out like I hoped that it would?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Aside from the ones who give one-word answers, you know, kind of, yes, I don't know. You know, that's just so you're thinking a half hour on your 5 minutes and you're done. I did a book about Bayview called Bayview, Wisconsin back in 1979. And what I would do is a lot of interviews with politicians and clergy, you know, people who you would expect to know the community well. And I was doing an interview with the pastor, a post-lunch interview with the pastor of Bayview's biggest Catholic church. And there was kind of a lull in the conversation, and he's nodding, and he's nodding, and he fell asleep.
Oh, that was to really reinforce your confidence as an interviewer, right?
Yeah, boy, did I feel stimulating.
Oh my gosh.
I think I cleared my throat, or, you know, kind of dropped my pen or something like that. turn off the tape recorder really loud. He kind of sort of funny. Came to, I won't provide his name, but, you know, people
may be able to figure it out.
Yeah, right.
So your newest book, Brewtown Tales, More Stories from Milwaukee and Beyond, is out now. But what are some mm-hmm. of the highlights of some of your favorite stories that are included in the new book?
These are largely Journal Sentinel columns, but not only. Included a story I did for Milwaukee Magazine about my years as a barfly on Milwaukee's south side at Big John's Tap, which is one of my favorite pieces in there. But there are 80 essays, largely bite-sized. They run, you know, I don't know, 1,200, 1,500 words through there. Some of the favorite ones, it's interesting. Some of them, my favorite ones are not so much historical. But one is a trip I took on Highway 12, coming from around the corner. We're shooting around the corner in Eau Claire. And I was going to bike, but it was raining, so I took Highway 12 instead of 94 and just sort of fell in love with this sort of slow road home that you can duplicate, you know, any place else in Wisconsin. That's a favorite one. I've done that at readings. Another was the safer inside was the jargon, the motto when COVID first hit. So saner inside, certainly, but I did safer inside, and I did a column called Saner Outside, which was kind of a description of following the progress of the spring of 2020. Mm-hmm. And that was a chance to really observe nature closely and to kind of get it down in writing. So those are two favorites. But then, you know, there's one about this one called A Socialist Citadel, which kind of describes the backstory of Milwaukee socialism. Certainly essays about segregation in Milwaukee, about Black Lives Matter in Milwaukee, so things that are topical as well. So it doesn't lack for variety.
Yeah, absolutely. It's probably, as long with some of the other ones, might be Christmas gifts this year. And I appreciated that if you want to not necessarily make Jeff Bezos richer, but want to mm-hmm. keep your purchase in the Wisconsin economy, you can buy it at shop.wisconsinhistory.org/Brewtown Tales, because it was Wisconsin Historical Society Press that published it, right?
Correct.
Absolutely.
And that's a great building to visit, too, the Wisconsin Historical Society.
Oh, yeah. It is. Yeah. They're across from the Union.
Everything that they do, I'm so constantly impressed and happy that we have the Wisconsin Historical Society and John Gerdach, because you're not retiring. So now that you've made your debut on this show, I'm sure there's going to be many, many opportunities where we're like, let's get John on the show. He can explain this to us.
Call Gerdach.
Thank you so much for joining us today. We will link the Jones Island PBS documentary and the new books and your website on our website for today's blog post. But John Gerdach, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
My pleasure, Kristen, and thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we're going to take another break. And when we come back, what would you do if you couldn't take a 2-hour flight and you had to take a train? Would you protest? I'm surprised the French aren't protesting, because that's what's happening there. All right. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
In the hands of God. Put all their trust in the hands of God.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Cardall put out these weird, sad videos interviewing incapacitated elders in their nursing homes that don't have the ability to say, don't use me as your political prop.
If they are what you say they are, then you shouldn't be doing it how you did it.
Yes, it was the kids using the parents as props. Well, my old man hasn't talked since 76. Of course he would have voted for Trump. That's the evidence. Videos. People that can't talk.
It is wrong. So it's absolutely dirty. Wrong.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
Dad, I picked up your pills, made your lunch, and your laundry is done.
When you care for a loved one, you take care of everything. But are you taking care of yourself? Find free care guides at aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. Cities across Ukraine have been hit by Russian missile attacks in recent days, knocking out power and water. But the retaken city of Kherson in the south has been taking particularly heavy punishment. Karen Shamas has the story.
The sound of shelling thunders across the Kherson skyline. Ukrainian troops on the front line launch reconnaissance drones to determine the enemy's positions before firing. Kurt, a commander for a military unit, told the AP that Russian soldiers had taken up positions on the left bank of the Dnipro River. While the goal for Ukraine is to push the Russians further back, crossing the Dnipro River has become tricky as both sides have destroyed surrounding bridges. A day earlier, at least 5 people died in the city from Russian shelling. Nevertheless, the mood in Kherson remains defiant and resolute, as Kherson resident Valentina Pedina tells the AP. Putin wanted to take Kherson. Never. We will die here, but we will not give it to him. I'm Karen Chamas.
Investigators say the gunman who killed 6 people at a Walmart in Chesapeake, Virginia Tuesday night bought the gun just hours before opening fire on co-workers. He also left a note listing grievances. Meanwhile, the mass shooting at a popular gay club last weekend has Colorado Springs looking inward.
I think a lot of people, including myself, might have ascribed to the notion that we were going to age out of hate.
State Representative Leslie Harrod is the first openly LGBTQ and black person elected to Colorado's General Assembly.
It's not going to just go away. In fact, it's being bred in our communities, and it's been lifted up. So we have to actively change that.
European Union data shows Twitter took longer to review hateful content and removed less of it in 2022 than last year. Meantime, Elon Musk says Twitter will try to relaunch its premium service next week. The last attempt was flooded with imposter accounts. This is AP News.
Join Max Inc. Radio this New Year's Eve as we present live at thespaceship.tv. Max Inc. Radio will broadcast live from the spaceship.tv studios 6 p.m. to midnight, plus live performances from the Civil Engineers. Linda and the Zeros. Porky's Groove Machine.
Who's there, the Spice Girls? Muy caliente. Oh, they're not hitting.
Live streaming video at thespaceship.tv and live on this Civic Media station. Let's party New Year's Eve starting at 6 p.m. live from thespaceship.tv. Happy New Year's from Civic Media and Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
Incredibly crafted wooden dollhouse, a two-story dollhouse where the bedrooms were on the second floor. We were raised in the first floor flat of a duplex. 3 bedrooms, a living room, a dining room, and a kitchen. 6 kids and a mom and dad. This dollhouse had bedrooms upstairs. We thought Santa made a mistake. And he meant to deliver this to a girl who lived closer to the lake.
Well, hopefully you recognize that voice because he is our guest for the next hour. But welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. But I am so excited to have this gentleman on the show for the next hour. He is the longtime host of the PBS Wisconsin show Around the Corner with John McGivern. He currently hosts the new show Main Streets. He's a 5-time Emmy Award winner, actor, comedian, state treasure, I would say.
There
Welcome to the
it.
Show, John McGivern.
Thanks. How are you?
I'm great.
Congratulations on this.
Thank you.
How exciting is this?
It's so fun. It's
you know what's really exciting about this? You have Jane Mann there.
I know. It was so funny because we were talking yesterday and prepping for today's show.
Yeah.
And I said, well, do you know John? She goes, oh, yeah. We go way back. And
right.
So I wanted to kind of surprise you, but apparently it wasn't a surprise, and you already knew that she was
part of the
show. I
read about it when this all happened. I'm very excited for you because she's great. She's great.
John, I met you when you taught a stand-up class, right? Isn't that how we met?
A storytelling class.
I think
I met you before that, too, Jane. I think I met when you were on the mix.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Way back when.
Way back. Yep.
Oh, she's a... Talk about a treasure.
Talk about a legend.
Yes.
In my own mind, at least.
No, in mine as well, Jane, just so you know.
No, I think most people, the amount of people who come in are like, well, of course I know Jane. Right. Just the imprint you have left on southeastern Wisconsin and that legendary voice.
It's great. This seems like a great team.
It is a great team.
Yeah, congratulations.
We're having so much fun.
Yeah.
It is certainly, as you probably, no surprise to you, as someone who's been doing a show, a live a TV show for a long time. It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. And you guys handle 3 hours a day, 5 days a week, don't you?
We do.
So when you said just an hour, I thought, well, I could come in for three.
You probably could come in for three. I would be like, that would be a very lively show. I'm just having you, the three of us, for 3 hours.
That's a lot of time.
It is a lot of time.
Yeah.
It is a lot of time. But we're, you know, it's very fun. I think what I have enjoyed so much about doing this, that it's so different from doing the short videos that I was doing, and I'm still trying to do, but doing both is a lot,
right,
is things like this. Mm-hmm. Because it's harder to invite someone onto a 60-second TikTok that you want to have a conversation with,
right,
versus being able to invite someone like you on to talk for an hour. And because so many people love you,
and
so many people get to have an opportunity to hear a conversation versus just see you perform or tune into your show. And so what's been really fun about having the radio show and having a platform is to be able to invite people on to just have a conversation.
Yeah.
And so I'm so excited to have you here.
So we both work in conversation. That's what we do. So my job on TV is to converse
and to
allow people to tell their stories, because that's really what we are, storytellers. But the fact that you do it live is frightening to
me. You're a live performer.
You know, I'm a live performer, but a live performer is different than a live radio. Here we go for 3 hours. You know, when I step on stage to do a live show, I have it pretty well planned as to what's going to happen. You'd open your dial and it's like, now what?
Well,
you know?
To be fair, and to pull back the curtain a little bit, I have an outline every day that I work on. I don't totally just freewheel it. But so one of the things that I think I joked about this as I promoted today's show. So when I was first planning to come back to Wisconsin,
mm-hmm,
and it was when it was first a documentary, but it was As Goes Wisconsin, I was trying to figure it out. My mom was like, I think you should get a hold of John McGivern. And she told me all about Around the Corner with John McGivern and how much she loves that show and how she watches it every weekend and how she feels like, I feel like you could be like a younger version of him. And I sent you an email. This was early 2020.
Yeah.
You never gave me back.
I didn't.
No.
Didn't I? Okay, well, there you go.
Fast forward to a year later, we had coffee a year ago.
Yes.
Because you'd transitioned from Around the Corner to now what's Main Streets. And what I didn't realize is how similar our journey has been as far as being from Wisconsin, going to LA, and coming back.
Career-wise.
So for people who don't know, and just know as far as what you've been able to do since coming back to Wisconsin, what was that journey of going out west and then coming back?
You know, the catalyst for my leaving the Midwest was that in 1993, I wrote a show called Midwest Side Story. And it was my own stories of growing up in Milwaukee and the East Side, believing that all of my stuff is really specific and really, you know, I did not realize that people would say, oh, my Lord, your story is my story. The streets are different. The names are different. But what happened in the heart, what happened in situation-wise is the same thing that happened to me. So I wrote this show, opened it at a theater in Chicago, and the second weekend after I opened, Comedy Central was in the house, and Comedy Central saw me do an hour and a half show of my stories and got a hold of me and said, we are producing an all gay special on Comedy Central, which would be the only second gay special ever to be on the air anywhere. And we want you to close the show with a 9-minute story. So Out There Too was shot in New York during during coming out month, October of 1994, I believe.
Wow, okay.
And from that, I got calls from all over, really, around what, you know, and I got an agent out of Los Angeles, and they said, you really need to come out here, which I look back and I realized that, you know, it was the early 90s, so it was a different world than it is today, yeah, when everything could really be done. What I moved to Los Angeles, and they sent me out on the road is what they did. You know, I did an all gay comedy special, and they sent me out to do comedy clubs in like Idaho. It's
like, how'd that go?
I can remember they had openers for me who were talking about hunting, and you know, and I was like, and I'm sitting in the back going, oh my God, I gotta get together my best hunting material. I do. What do I love about hunting? I love the outfits. I'll talk about them. No, I'm telling you, I was freaking out. And when they introduced me as the guy from the all-gay comedy special, and I'm standing in the back ready to walk on stage, and you hear people going, did they say gay? I'm like, oh, my Lord, is this going to work? You know, but can I tell you, that universal sort of, like, my stories are about, yeah, my mom, about my brothers and sisters, about growing up Irish Catholic. You know, it's so... When you cut away all the other stuff and you just really talk about a human experience, which is really what I've come to know, that's what I do. Mm-hmm. It made no difference, you know, and Idaho was great. And that tour that I did around after that Comedy Central special. Then after that, HBO hired me to do another all-gay special. There were 7 of us who went out there, and that was an HBO special. So it was funny that I was known for my stand-up, which I'm really not a stand-up. Like, if you've ever seen my, like, I'm just not a stand-up comic. I'm a storyteller who sits on a stool and tells a story that at the end that there's a payoff. But, you know, as a stand-up, it's got to be quick. And,
yeah,
so, and that's,
it's like every 15 seconds, there's a joke. Or, yeah, it's not like me. Set up punchline. Yeah.
It's not me. But L.A. really proved to me what was most important, and that was getting back to some place that felt like home, because Los Angeles didn't. I lived there for 8-9 years and so worked.
That's a substantial amount of time.
It was, and I really worked hard, and I worked a lot, and you know, I did some commercial stuff that paid a lot of money, and I mean, that kind of stuff was fun. But to get home and really kind of figure out what I wanted to do, and what happened, which was really exciting for me, that I always had a fallback, which was a show called Sheer Madness, okay, which is a show that I first did in 1984 in Chicago. And it was a show that ran in places all over the country and ran for a very long time. So when they opened a new show, they would call me to play this character whose name was Tony Whitcomb, who was a gay hairdresser, over-the-top gay hairdresser, who owned the salon where the play took place. And so no matter if I was ever out of work, I could always call them and say, what do you have? So I did the show at the Kennedy Center in D.C., in Chicago, in St. Paul, in San Francisco, in Portland. I would just say, I've got 2 months. Where can you put me? And they'd slot me in, which was the best. Then they gave me the rights to the show.
Oh, wow.
And I came home with the rights to Sheer Madness in my back pocket, and I collaborated with the Milwaukee Rep and the Marcus Center for the Performing Arts. We were the 3 producers, and we put it up in Vogel Hall at the Marcus Center to what we believed would be a 6-week run. It ran for 3.5 months and brought in $1.9 million. And the Marcus Center and the Milwaukee Rep said, is there anything else you're thinking of doing?
what other things can we collaborate on?
Exactly.
This one went really, really well.
And we did. We went on for years and collaborated on projects. And it was the first time the Milwaukee Rep and the Marcus Center came together, because the Milwaukee Rep wasn't going to produce this in their season. And the Marcus Center didn't really produce shows. They presented them. So the Milwaukee Rep produced Marcus Center presented, and I was the glue with all of it.
So how many years did that run then?
We ran that 4 times over the course of 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Okay. We also did The Odd Couple, which a co-production. We also did...
Who was your co-star in that?
Chris Tarian, who was my co-star in Sheer Madness.
Okay.
So... there was a campaign out with that to get the word out. It was John McGivern and that other guy.
Oh,
Chris was that other guy. We did Fully Committed as a co-production, that one-man show about somebody sitting in the basement of a restaurant taking reservations. What else did we? So we collaborated for years.
And so our guest right now is John McGivern, as he just said, who is a actor, comedian, TV host, storyteller, and he's here all hour. But so, because a big thing for me, I would say, and I, you know, mine was 17 years of leaving at 16, wow. L.A., Berkeley, San Francisco, New York, back to L.A., did a lot of different things beyond just performing. But for me, coming back to Wisconsin has been hands down the best decision of my life because, I mean, personally, I've now married, but also career-wise, just how much has kind of fallen into place. It has provided an atmosphere where I can combine all the different experiences and talent that I've collected. And I would have, if you told me 3 years ago, I would have been like, why would I move back to Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Like this pressure or this feeling that you have to be in one of the big cities to do this thing that we call performing or, you know, but there's so much oxygen here to be able to come and create something interesting and valuable. And so like, was that, it sounds like that was almost immediately you were finding success in LA, but there was something that really opened up for you being able to come back to Wisconsin.
And when I came back with the rights of that show to that show in my pocket, I wasn't sure if I would stay here. I knew that that would probably be successful. And it was beyond successful. And with people asking what I wanted to do next. And then I got a job with TMJ4 as somebody on Friday mornings. They put me out on the street talking about what's best about living in this community. So live shots on television on Friday mornings, and then they gave me Wednesday mornings as well. So it was Wednesday and Friday. Then they brought me into studio, so I started doing TV stuff regularly. And then PBS got a hold of me and said, we want to shoot your one-man show on stage. And I said, that would be great. And then we had our production meeting. They said, no, we think it'd be best if we shot it on location where the stories took place. Mm-hmm. So it just so happened that they assigned a producer, Lois Maurer, who has now been my producer. We've worked together for 15 years. Yeah. This woman who is like my, you know.
You two are together. Yeah,
she's the best. She's the best. As my mother, you know, may she rest in peace, my mother. But she, when I first started working with Lois Maurer, my mom said, you need to hitch your wagon to her. Lois was like, what? But she was assigned that project called The Early Stories of John McGivern. And because of that, you know, we've worked together forever.
And so when we come back, we'll talk more about how that turned into Around the Corner and then how that's turned into Main Streets. I'm so excited that you're here. John McGivern is our guest until 12:30. Stay with us. We have so many more stories to tell. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Soon you gonna take their place. Wagon on their front door. Wanna send you packing on the double. You ain't going away no more. Laugh and be happy. Don't you ever wear a fright. Get right back on your feet.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Olivia from Washington. Laid off and trying to keep our little kids from realizing that mommy and daddy haven't eaten in a while.
Roger from California. I'm grateful we could afford our son's surgery.
I'm nervous that now we can't really afford food.
Daniel from California. Choosing whether to pay the rent or pay to fix the car to get to work doesn't leave us with much at all. Now we can't even pay for meals.
Donna from Louisiana. The storm just hit, and we went from donating to the food bank to needing it.
Keisha from South Carolina. I've been skipping meals so my two kids can eat, but filling up on water doesn't really work.
Hunger is a story we can end. End it at feedingamerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Chance for scattered rain showers this afternoon. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. Daytime highs approaching 38. Winds out of the southeast around 5 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Mixed precipitation possible at times. Lows dip down to about 33. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Highs level off around 37. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 34 degrees.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
The Hogans, they have flocked tree. Why is their tree baby blue? Shh, John, don't ask those questions. But why? I just want. Shh, John, no, that's just a. No, but why is the Hogan's tree blue? And my mom said, because they're from West Dallas.
Stallus. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Reminder that we love hearing from you. If you have a topic, if you have a guest that we should bring on, let us know. But our guest right now, as you just heard, is the one and only six-time Emmy Award winner, John McGivern, who just won your sixth Emmy on Saturday. That's so exciting.
For hosting a magazine show, it was very exciting. I didn't go to the same. It was in Chicago.
Okay.
It's the Midwest Emmys, and I didn't go. But I watched. I watched the live stream, and the announcement was great. I'm very excited and proud.
You should be.
Yeah.
So we were talking before about kind of all the different things that you've done between TV and storytelling, live storytelling, and then it turned into Around the Corner with John McGivern, which has now turned into Main Street. And so tell me a little bit more about how the original show started and how that translated into now Main Street, which is more Midwest than just Wisconsin, right?
Right. So Milwaukee PBS shot my stage show, as I said, on location, turned it into a special that aired in markets outside of Milwaukee as well, called The Early Stories of John McGivern. Then it used to be that you could pitch a committee around a series on Milwaukee PBS, and Lois, who had produced that, we had such a great time doing that project that she said we should find something that we could work together all the time. And we came up with this concept called Around the Corner with John McGivern, and we pitched it to the committee, and they said no, that it's missing something. And what they thought was missing was history. So okay. Lois said, do you want to do the history research? And I was like, not really. Are you interested? She said, not really. I said, wait, I know John Goerda. Let's call John Goerda and see if John Goerda would do this segment on our show.
John Goerda is going to be here Thursday.
Oh, that's so good. How great is that?
That's so great. Like, yeah. He's an amazing person to tap. So anyone who's not familiar with John Goerda, he is the Milwaukee historian. He's made an entire career out of the history of Milwaukee, and he just announced that his column for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is ending.
Yeah.
And so, just for a little context there. So he was then helping with the show.
He was, if you watched it, so we did 9 years, 117 episodes, and he was the guy who rode up on the bike and gave us 3 minutes of wherever, the history of wherever we were that week. And then for four of the years, I believe he had an hour-long special that we shot with him as well.
Okay.
So there was the John, you know, around the corner with John Goerda, that was an hour-long special that we had. So he was with us for 9 years.
Wow.
When the show was no longer renewed, which was after our ninth season, you know, to say goodbye to John Gerda was really was hard and sad, because you know it was a weekly, once a week, every through the course of our summer, 13 episodes for 9 seasons we were together, and it's just such a really good, smart, informed, very regular, you know, and he puts things in a language that we all can you know take, and he's great, so I miss him. But once he signed on, the committee approved the show, okay. And they approved 1 season, 13 episodes, and we Lois produced it. We kept it very local. We kept it very Milwaukee centric that first year until PBS Wisconsin, which there's 2 PBS networks in Wisconsin. PBS Wisconsin, which is out of Madison, which covers all of the state except southeast Wisconsin. So Racine, Kenosha, Milwaukee is covered by Milwaukee PBS. The rest of the state is PBS Wisconsin. They picked us up the first year and ran it the same time we ran it in Milwaukee. So 7 o'clock Thursday nights, which is local night on PBS, PBS Wisconsin played us. So season 2, we went a little further so that their air was covered as well. And we did that for 9 seasons. And over the course of that 9 seasons, we became the highest rated show Milwaukee PBS had ever produced. And then it became the highest rated PBS show on Thursday nights on any station in the country for years running, which was so great. Then PBS World picked it up. So over the course of the last 4 years of that run, PBS World, which runs all over the country, ran Around the Corner with John McGivern. Yeah.
So this might be a hard question to answer, because it's always uncomfortable to toot your own horn. At least I find it uncomfortable. What do you think the magic of that show was, of why it was so popular, and what about it appealed to so many people that it had such a successful run?
I think it was accessible. I think where we went was accessible. Who we talked to was accessible. If people wanted to take a 45-minute drive to Sheboygan Falls and go to the Firehouse Pizza, or walk down Main Street and go to the Beavis toilet seat company. I mean, it was all of that, where it felt like, oh my, we can go do that. And then they would show up and like talk to the person that I had a chance to talk to, you know. So I think it was accessibility and really kind of feeling, I think the show felt really familiar with everybody. And I think it's the case with the new show as well. And Lois, unlike you, I don't mind tooting my own horn.
Fair enough.
Maybe we're different like that. Lois believes that, and you know, I don't have a fear to chat.
Yeah.
And to ask, and to, you know, I'm curious, and to sit down and chat with somebody, you know, as somebody who does what you do, that people like to talk about themselves.
That's
they
true.
Do. So let me ask you about your business. Let me ask you about your home. Let me ask you about the town that you call home, and you know, you've got a show.
And it's so interesting, because as the interviewer, there are obviously someone else is asking the questions, but knowing how to mold the conversation, how to have a quick one-liner to come back with, how to then look to camera and say something else witty. And so like that is such a skill set that I'm so fascinated. We have to take another break, but I'm so interested to know if that was just something that is innately in you, or if it's something that you felt like you had to learn and get feedback on, because it's like anything, that you make it look so easy for something that is a lot harder to do once you actually try, as I now know.
There you go.
So we're going to take another break. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Strike me as funny. I can't hide it inside and squeak as the squeakulers do. I got to let go with a hoe. How nice! I was hoping you'd turn up. We all would have such a jolly time. We love to laugh loud and long.
love to laugh. So everybody can hear. The more you laugh.
Whoops, don't you two start. Come back down here.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
It's 4 a.m. and you're sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. If you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. Find out more at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and...
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.